Namaste and Hari Om. This is Kishore Trivedi welcoming you to today's episode of Know Your Dharma program on Radio Naira. As you know, this radio program is part of Know Your Dharma initiative of the Hindu Society of North Carolina. In the past recordings of both these audio clips as well as the other parts of Know Your Dharma initiative can be found on the KYD tab of hsnctemple.org website. Today, we continue with our guest who was there last week, Anju Bhargav, who is the founder of Hindu American Seva Communities and a former member of President Barack Obama's inaugural Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. I know that's a mouthful. Professionally, she was a banker, and with her peers, she helped create a corporate diversity network and augmented Governor Whitman's leadership initiatives in New Jersey. Today's topic is how Anju Bhargav evolved in her understanding of Dharma. Anju Bhargav, you spent the first part of your life in India and more recent decades in US. I assume your understanding of Dharma has evolved during these two periods.
Mm-hmm. Yes, namaste Kishoreji, and thank you for inviting me to your program again. It's really an honor to be here. So I left India when I was 20 years old. And during that period of my time before coming over here was basically a student life. So my understanding of Hinduism and Dharma was really just learned by observation. Watching my grandmothers, what they did and the pujas that they did, and they went to the temples. And my mother was involved with charity work and seva work. We were not really taught, you know, in a classroom setting that this is what Hinduism is. It was there. Stories were told, you observed and you learned. And my family actually went to a number of teachers, and I trace it back to my grandfather, who was the general manager of Reserve Bank of India in the 1930s. He was in Chennai, and he was one of the witnesses of Ramana Maharshi's will signing. And he took my father, who was 8 years old then, with him. So my grandfather and my father were all seekers. They were more on the Vedantic side. And so there were a lot of books at home. About Vedanta, who am I, what am I? And my father was my role model in many ways. So I used to also read some of the books that were in the house that got left from my grandfather and my father's own development. So that's how I sort of observed and read and got a base foundation, which helped and prepared me for when I came to America.
Yeah. So basically the way in which we learn in India is through osmosis, like you described. And so when you came to US, when did your interest in Dharma arise you to more reading or whatever?
So when I came to the US, the first thing was, as you can imagine, was just survival, because we didn't really have a safety net. And I got an MBA from Rutgers, and and got a job, and my daughter was born, and we were just working and trying to build ourselves up. And when she was about two and a half years old, she was going to Montessori school at that time. She asked me, "Why do I look different?" So I attribute my journey of life in America of the search to my daughter asking me the question, because the India I grew up in was a pluralistic India. In school, I went to the Catholic schools, but there were people of all different faiths there. Religion wasn't pulled out that much. And diversity was just around, and my daughter became conscious of it. And I personally didn't think I was different when I was growing up. But even at the age of two, she was aware that she's different. And so for me, it was, okay, how do I make her be proud of who she is? How do I make her be comfortable in her skin? And have the strength that I am of this tradition, I am of this culture, and I live in America. So I've discovered that when you talk about, from my perspective, Indian culture and festivals, Hindu culture, it's really tied to what we would quote unquote call this religion or stories behind it. Because every festival, which is how we observe the tradition outside, is tied to a story. So then I went back to try to create more of a learning environment for her. At that time, we did not have the kind of like Vivekananda Vidyapeeth and other kinds of classes. So we created a group of us, created our own classes to try to teach the children the basics of shlokas. And we learned in the process itself. And that's how I got started in America, to learning in order to teach my daughter and trying to find what aspects of the Hindu tradition, culture, religion would help her be, I guess, a better Hindu American or a better American, and be able to be comfortable in the world now in which she was growing up in, which was different from my world. So I was trying to teach her, as you had rightfully pointed out, it was an osmosis, but it was more of, distilled teaching, so that she had that base foundation.
Yes, indeed. In this country, we can't depend on osmosis. We have to be more active in learning and teaching our kids. And these days, of course, it's much easier. We have many different opportunities, many different groups like Bal Vihar of Chinmaya Mission, or Sanskar Gurukul at our HSNC, and Bal Mukund of JK Yoga, and so on. So there are such opportunities. And I would urge our listeners, if they have young children, to take advantage of this. Mm-hmm. And that way, you know, there is this famous acronym, ABCD, mm-hmm. which should be taken as American-born confident desis.
Absolutely.
Make them confident desis, not confused desis.
Right.
If you take them through these various avenues of learning about our heritage, which is very rich and we should be very proud of, whereas some people decide to go totally that we want to forget about all that and we want to become totally Western and American, which is fine for some people, but for most of us, we want to retain our identity and be American-born confident desis.
Right. Now,
who were the major influences and what were the major sources of information that you used in teaching the children?
I actually a whole varied group of teachers that I had. I participated with the Satya Sai Baba group with the Bal Vihar classes to create, at that time, there were no classes being taught. So we created our own 1 hour schedule so that we could teach the children the shlokas and tell them stories. I also happened to live at that time in a city called Livingston in New Jersey, where most of us were by trial and error trying to learn this. And the community did come together and we had a Diwali function. So the children, when my daughter was 4 years old, for example, she was Sita in a play that I wrote and others, you know, we just did our own homegrown stuff at that time. And the children in the community participated and we did Garba and, we enacted different things so that the children got that perspective of the tradition. Even though it wasn't, it wasn't that everybody, the mainstream community was celebrating at that time. Today is a different matter. Today, Diwali is, everybody is aware of Diwali, everybody is celebrating Diwali and so on. But I'm talking about that time. And we did not even have role models. There were not that many people who had grown children, who had grown up in the system that you could look up to and say, oh, this is how, you know, this is why this is important or that is important. It was an experiment for us in terms of teaching the children. My sources were from our, I was lucky enough that every time I went to India, my parents gave me a lot of books and I was able to synthesize and teach the stories from the Panchatantra and so on to my daughter. So Sai Baba group of people were very helpful in teaching. The children, we had a small group of a few children that I was the Balvikas teacher for them. We taught them all faiths. In the early years, the temples were just developing. They had developed, they didn't have classroom teaching or anything, but taking them to visit the temple just to show what it looked like. Over the years, the teaching also evolved as I learned more, because mine was just osmosis, but I also learned more, read more. And Ed Vishwanath's book, Daddy, Am I a Hindu, was very helpful in teaching the children as they, my daughter and the other children as they grew. We also incorporated principles from other faiths just so that the children were aware of other traditions, you know, that they encounter, especially in a cosmopolitan place like Livingston was with many different religions. I also became part of our Interfaith Clergy Association and became a priest in that. I also learned from a Jewish teacher, which was all more of the metaphysical aspects. And I say that because it gave me the foundation and the training, which I will explain later, how it helped me to understand and look at our festivals from an adhyatmic perspective, that what is the underlying meaning of it by learning about others, how they were interpreting their religion in different ways, not just looking at it from just the literal sense, but the meaning behind it. It was a training that I got from other sources, from and my own teacher in Chennai, Swami Paramarthanand, who is a wonderful Vedantic teacher and who helped explain a lot of the underlying things. It came knowledge, you know, when as if you seek, it shall be given kind of a thing. As slowly as I progressed, opportunities and knowledge came along. And I was able to expose my daughter to many different aspects of being Indian. In addition to being Hindu, being comfortable wearing your clothes, and we walked for the first time in the Memorial Day parade, that it's okay to wear what your, you know, your ethnic clothes and be out in the public. And again, trial and error. Tried many different ways to pass on the sense of Indianness as well as the Americanness, that learn piano, do ballet, you know, all of those things, so that the child, you know, because I didn't know what skills she would need and what kind of a culture would she grow up in. So most of our attempts were to expose to as many things as possible so that when the child reached their own maturity, they had things to fall back on. Because that's what I learned, that I'm grateful that I was exposed to all of that stuff, because when I needed, I had all these arrows in my toolbox, basically. So whichever arrow I needed for my bow at that time, I could shoot that. And at least I had the basic knowledge of the skills. So in our experimental perspective, we try to pass that on to the children.
Very good. So one of the important points that you made is that in order to teach these values and understanding of Dharma to the children, parents themselves need to learn.
And absolutely.
That's a very important point. That,
yeah.
It is okay if you don't know something, but it is possible to find out
right
from many sources
right,
and then explain to your children. So it is right. Learning together rather than teaching your children what you know.
Right.
And another thing in this context, somebody else, one of the other interviewers had pointed out, was that we don't want superiority complex or inferiority complex in our children. What That's we right. want is equality complex.
Right.
That you don't feel that, oh, my culture is so great that, you know, Western stuff is all no good. Or the other way around, that you feel shriveled and you feel the West is very well advanced and we are from the Stone Ages. Neither of this is true. And so having equality complex is what you want to inculcate in your children.
No, you are very right. As you rightfully pointed out, a lot of people do feel that, oh, everything started from India and and everything here is not so good. And you're absolutely correct. Balance is the most important thing.
Very good. Now, you also have performed as a priest, priestess, I would say. So when did that get started and how was the experience and who helped you along the way?
So when I started my interfaith journey, I didn't know much. I was not sure how to present it. So I actually used Swami Vivekananda's speech that he made in Chicago at the first Parliament of World Religion as a starting point. And I made a PowerPoint presentation of it. And I would talk about Hinduism from that perspective because I felt confident that what I'm saying is backed by somebody like Swami Vivekananda. And I'm echoing his perspective. And that's how I started moving into that kind of role of representing Hinduism. And as I was doing that in Livingston, we had an interfaith clergy association. It started a long time ago, just brief history, as a way for each group of from a Protestant to Catholic to Jewish people coming in for them to understand, because in this country, the religious identity plays a great role in the public platform. So when in the 1990s, there was an incident against an Asian child, the mayor of the town said to me, Anju, why don't you participate in the clergy association, given your interest in these things, and you can reach the hearts and minds of people through that. So that, and then there was a British woman who was my adopted mother. She pushed me. She said, you should represent your, and so I am giving credit to her, represent your community in that. So that's how I started wearing that clergy sort of persona. And then I was actually really more interested in the metaphysical and the Vedantic. And I used to think, well, what is the point of pujas? This takes so long to do. And who are, you know, you're praying to the Murti and stuff. I did not have full understanding of what puja was. And it so happened that somebody asked me to do Satyanarayan puja. And Dr. M.G. Prasad, who is no longer with us now, he was a very learned person in New Jersey and had started a lot of educational efforts in New Jersey. He gave me a few books and I realized what the interconnection between the adhyatmic and the metaphysical, the Vedic, and the way we practice is. Then I got hooked. And when I was doing it putting the Sanskrit aspect with that, I found that with my PowerPoint presentations, I could explain to people as I was doing the puja. So then I moved into doing the puja realm because I thought taking the concepts from Dr. N.G. Prasad of what is multifaceted Vedic Hinduism, because we need to learn ourselves first, what is Hinduism, how does it connect before you do a puja. So I took it upon myself to put all of that together. I do not take very long, but I feel that a lot of Hindus come for pujas like me and don't understand what it is. Why are we doing it? And they think that, oh, it's mumbo jumbo. It's somebody saying something in Sanskrit. And I found my niche in trying to explain that. And in the process, understanding it. And that has taken me down my pujari journey. It started with Satyanarayan Puja. Understanding what the inner meaning of it is. And now, as you know, I'm doing the weddings and stuff. But when you explain what it is, then there it makes perfect sense. And you see the beauty of what the ancient minds had tried to put into practice for us. I see Hinduism as the practical aspect of the Vedantic thought. It's very hard to just know philosophy. How do you live it out in daily life? So the whole Hindu infrastructure, which became very structured over the years, and then the structure itself became like, you shall do this and you shall not do this. And it held people in place. However, it provided a way for people to be able to do things and practice that which was what the Vedas were teaching. But over time, that connection and the understanding of what it is that we are doing got lost. So in my own little way, I'm trying to bridge that understanding and say, no, this puja, what does puja mean? Why are we doing it? What does a deity mean? Why, you know, all of that to help people understand. And so I enjoy doing that. And I'm taking that role now more as being a pujari in trying to explain to people more of what our tradition is.
You know, so I would suggest if you are so inclined to have another session, another interview on the puja and its meaning.
Okay.
But so today, is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, I do want to talk about the seva aspect. As I had mentioned that in the public platform, what people see and how you express your tradition and values, especially in this country, it is through service. The Christians do a great job with it. The Sikhs do a great job with langar. Hindus do, and annadanam is part of going to a temple and doing the you know service. But in the public platform, we need to learn our own stories because they're important. They're archetypes which help us to understand the history from which we came and the culture which we came. And we all need some sort of a connection with who we are, with the identity. At the ultimately, who am I is a very metaphysical aspect. But as a group of people, it's nice to know what your tradition was. So to bring from that context, to bring that underlying meaning out into the open and serve through that is what I feel a way for people to see Hinduism in practice.
Absolutely.
Puja is one way, but seva is a way that you can do with others and be on the same page as them when they are doing for their faith. You do for Diwali, you do for whatever festival that you're doing with. And I know we've talked about the festivals of service, but you do, and that's the, that I think is an important aspect of the seva. And we try to bring that out during the time that I was with the White House by having 5 conferences focused on how do we energize seva and exploring different ways in which in the public platform, we bring our values to life.
So in that context, I have 2 ideas. One is that there is this Om Squad at HSNC, and I would like you to maybe sitting down with the Om Squad people to see if they can get your ideas incorporated into their structure, as well as at the Hindu Student Association at Duke, sitting down with their co-presidents and our chaplain someday. But the other thing I wanted to mention is that this interfaith, there is a triangle interfaith alliance, and I've gone there sometimes. And before that, there used to be something, I forget what it was called, interfaith group at Duke University also, which I participated in. These are very good experiences. So yes, indeed, You've covered a huge amount of material here. So is there anything else you want to, any parting thoughts?
For the young people, as they go through to find, if today there are many ways in which you can understand the stories, to see the stories, understand the underlying meaning of it, and not to reject them that, oh, they're irrelevant, but to see, pick what is relevant for you, what connects with you, and to bring it out in, you know, bring it into action through service or whatever speaks to you, but to be connected with your, with some aspects of your tradition.
And the tradition should be understood, and whatever you can understand, implement that. Yes, indeed.
That's correct.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Anju Ben, again, for taking the time to do this interview. And Hari Om.
Hari Om.